listen, listen, listen. God is speaking to us.
Kairos Milwaukee United Church of Christ presents After Enlightenment, The Laundry. The sermon by the Reverend Gene Randall Bodman, presented on Sunday, February 11th, 2018.
One of the service activities I enjoyed most with my former youth group was serving breakfast at Clay Street Table. Clay Street is a meals program and a food pantry serving people experiencing poverty and homelessness in downtown Portland. We volunteered there with some regularity, and we got to know some of the other regulars, volunteers and guests, and people who were both, which is helpful because the space seems far too small for the number of people who are welcomed and fed, hundreds of them every Saturday. The first time I walked into that crowded kitchen, which is much smaller than our own, my first thought was, you have got to be kidding me. And my second thought was, oh, right, there must be another kitchen. Except there wasn't. There were other storage areas tucked in the basement and the back hallway, but in terms of food preparation, the space I was looking at, that high-ceilinged but narrow room, the center of which was almost taken up by a great, huge stove and oven, that was it. You had to sort of turn sideways to pass another person to get from sink to refrigerator. Such cramped quarters, combined with the joyful, can-do spirit of the regulars, made it easy to get to know people, which in turn made the work more efficient and more fun. And since Clay Street is the kind of community where the distinction between guest and volunteer is blurred, we soon knew many of the people who came there just to eat, and for whom it was their community, their table. One particular Saturday, as things began to wind down a bit and the frantic pace in the kitchen slowed, I stepped into the dining room and saw a person I had never met before coming in to eat. He was not, on that day anyway, communicating verbally, and he used a wheelchair for mobility. The friend who had accompanied him had gone ahead to get some things from the food pantry, and the man using the chair had been left temporarily alone, right in the path of all of the servers. And distressingly, at some point in his day, his clothes had become disarranged, and his body was exposed in the back. None of us in our group had ever met him before, and we were frozen in place by a mixture of embarrassment and concern. Just at that moment, one of our most and least favorite guests came in. I'll call her Alice. Now, Alice was a most favorite guest to us because she was strikingly beautiful in a way that had to do with her outward appearance, yes, but even more with her inner energy. She was intelligent, theatrical, funny, and the room filled up with electricity when she entered. She was our least favorite because depending on the day and her health and her mood, all that energy could turn into a thundercloud, loud and angry, demanding and unreasonable. On this particular Saturday, a storm was brewing in Alice's mind, and she came in imperious and noisy, demanding attention and complaining about everything. We were serving the wrong kind of eggs. The bagels were too cold. The tea was too hot. Didn't anyone at the table have anything interesting to say for themselves? She dominated conversation the length of the table, and all the other people sighed heavily and kept their faces turned toward their food against the onslaught of her energy. And then her eye was caught by the man using the chair, who was making sounds and gesticulating in a way that none of us could interpret, although I imagine the friend who brought him could have. His chair was still stopped in the crossroads between the hall to the kitchen and the path to all of the tables, and volunteer servers were still stepping around him gingerly and averting their gazes. Alice fell silent. She stood up and walked slowly, almost dreamily, across the room. And as she walked, she unwound a long silk scarf from around her neck. She passed behind the man, and in one graceful movement, she unwound the last circle of scarf, lifted it high, and let it drop and drift down so that it covered the man. She doubled around and went back to her seat and spent the rest of the morning in contented silence. Her manic talking and her scowling face were transformed. Her whole being transfigured, as if all that chaotic energy had been pulled together and organized by that one act of grace. Every one of us saw it, that radiance of her peaceful face. Her physical beauty was visible now that she was no longer angry. But also, every one of us witnessed her small act of love, and we saw her in a new way. We saw her not just as the alternately charming and annoying spark plug of a person, but as deep-hearted and compassionate and whole. She is still a mystery to me. When I see her at Clay Street table, I don't know what's coming, her charming self or her chaotic self. She's driven by anxieties and angers that I know nothing about. But I was given a new way to see her, and I've never forgotten it. It reminds me always to try to see people carefully, not just the bright or dark surfaces that are easiest to see. It reminds me that often there is a deeper, clearer truth than what I can see at first. I think today's story of the transfiguration of Jesus may have operated in the same way for Peter and James and John. These three of Jesus' first followers had been following him since the beginning, traveling with him while he taught and preached, healed and fed. They were witnesses when he raised a little girl from the dead, just 6 or so days before today's story, Peter had made his famous confession and realization, "You are the Messiah." But now, in this moment, they are seeing Jesus in a new way. Jesus is transfigured before them not because he had changed, but because they had been given eyes to see a dimension of him they had glimpsed and even named, but did not fully see. His clothes became blindingly white, and suddenly he was not just their friend and their rabbi. He was talking to Moses and Elijah. And for those of you not keeping track, they'd been dead for quite a while. Well, Moses had. Elijah never actually died, but was taken into heaven on a fiery chariot. But that's its own wild Bible story, and I think for today we'll just stick with one. As Nadia Boltz-Weber described it, it feels magical, this story of Jesus transfigured on a mountain, talking to Moses and Elijah. It's as though time ceased to be a neat, straight line, pulled taut, with the present in its appropriate place, distant from the past and the future. It's as if on the Mount of Transfiguration, the line of time was folded in on itself, with past, present, and future all touching for that one moment. And in that moment of time folding in and standing still, God said to them, "This is my beloved Son. Listen to him." Now, Peter responds in the very most Peter way imaginable. And in his quite understandable terror, he says, "It's good to be here. Let's build some booths." Peter's response can, rationally, from a biblical studies perspective, be a reference to the booths built at the Festival of Booths. But it's also a window into such a human reaction, our human tendency to want to domesticate the uncanny and the holy, to control things if they get too radiant and shiny for us. We have trouble standing still in the face of the holy and the inexplicable. But here's the thing about life with God. The more we know, the less we know for sure. The more God reveals God's self to us, the less certainty we have. The story is not about gaining certainty. It's good for us to hear that story here together, not so that we can get easy answers, but so that we can have our wonder restored and remember our own mountaintop moments, those moments of illumination that happen to all of us. It takes time to have the story of Christ lived out in community, to be transformed together into what we have witnessed. Sometimes it happens slowly, like water forming a rock. So it is good to be together, so that when we come down from the mountain, when our transfiguring moments, our own glimpses of glory, have receded into memory, we can remind each other and continue to be nourished. On December 31st, 2016, Valerie Kaur, a Sikh American, which she pronounces Sikh, and so from now on, so will I, she spoke at the National Moral Revival Watch Night Service at the Metropolitan African Methodist Episcopal Church in D.C. That's a lot of words to say that she spoke at a New Year's Eve service that was interfaith. That's what you need to know. Ms. Kaur is a lawyer and an activist. But when she spoke, it was a better sermon than your current pastor has ever given in her life. I encourage you all to find it on YouTube. Just Google Valerie Kaur Watch Night, and it should come right up. I cannot do her justice, but on this Transfiguration Sunday, I need to share her vision with you, because it has moved me so much. She spoke about her grandfather arriving in this country in 1913 and being jailed almost immediately because someone found his Sikh turban and medallion intimidating. She told how on Christmas Eve, a white lawyer produced a writ of habeas corpus that freed him, and how much later, after he had been farming for many years, the Japanese farmers who had the land next to him were sent to an internment camp. And so, remembering the lawyer who had worked for him, he traveled to Arizona to visit his neighbors and bring them supplies. And he worked with his other neighbors to save their land for when they returned. She told the story of her dear family friend, whom she addressed as uncle, who was murdered at a gas station 2 days after 9/11 because someone mistook his Sikh turban as a sign of Muslim faith and assumed that all Muslims must be terrorists. She told of being inspired by these facts to become a lawyer and to work for peace and justice. And then she told of her fear after the birth of her son, a beautiful brown-skinned American boy, born into an America grown increasingly alien to her. In her own words, "In America today, as we enter an era of enormous rage, as white nationalists hail this moment as their great awakening, as hate acts against Sikhs and our Muslim brothers and sisters are at an all-time high, I know that there will be moments, whether on the streets or in the schoolyards, where my son will be seen as foreign, as suspect, as a terrorist. Just as black bodies are still seen as criminal, brown bodies are still seen as illegal, trans bodies are still seen as immoral, indigenous bodies are still seen as savage, the bodies of women and girls seen as someone else's property. And when we see these bodies not as sisters and brothers, then it becomes easier to bully them, to rape them, and to allow policies that neglect them, incarcerate them, and even kill them. Yes, the future is dark. On this New Year's Eve, this watch night, I close my eyes and I see the darkness of my grandfather's cell. And I can feel the spirit of ever-rising optimism in the Sikh tradition within him. So the mother in me asks, what if? What if this darkness is not the darkness of the tomb, but the darkness of the womb? What if our America is not dead, but a country that is waiting to be born? What if the story of America is one long labor? What if all our grandfathers and grandmothers are standing behind us now, those who survived occupation and genocide, slavery and Jim Crow, detentions and political assault? What if they are whispering in our ears, you are brave? What if this is our nation's greatest transition? What does the midwife tell us to do as we give birth? Breathe, and then push. Because if we don't push, we will die. If we don't push, our nation will die. Tonight, we will breathe. Tomorrow, we will labor in love, through love. And your revolutionary love is the magic we will show our children. The beloved community belongs to divine oneness, and so does all that it achieves. And so with Valerie, I ask, what if? What if your moments of mysterious illumination are the voices of the ancestors? Hold on to them. What if your memories of transfiguration are the voices of the spirit midwife? Don't let go of them. Keep with you the mystery of Christ's love and glory as we travel together through these dark times, as we listen together for the voices of our ancestors, the ancestors of our families and the ancestors of our faith, as they stand behind us, a great cloud of witnesses, reminding us that this present darkness is the womb of a new life, as they remind us together to breathe and to push. And let all the people say, amen.
Listen, listen, listen.